Have you ever been assigned a patient that winds up being not so cut and dry? Like those patients in acute care or the nursing home who have dysphagia but struggle to complete exercises or compensatory strategies because of their intellectual or developmental disability? Or the patient with respiratory failure who develops respiratory-driven cardiac arrest, gets intubated for 10 plus days, and is on a trach and vent. Oh, and he also has a history of stroke, congestive heart failure, COPD, diabetes, and traumatic brain injury. No textbook or single webinar could ever prepare you for that. But we have something that can help you get there, and it's totally free. On May 19th, the MedSLP Collective is hosting another never-been-done-before virtual summit titled Advanced Therapy for Complex Patients, a Medical SLP's Guide. Learn critical concepts with actionable steps you can take for those not-so-cut-and-dry cases. You can earn up to 0.8 advanced ASHA CEUs if you are or you become a member of the MedSLP Collective, and the recording is also available inside of the collective. Ready to scale your clinical skills? Go to medslpcollective.com/summit to register today. On this episode of the Swallow Your Pride podcast, we have Jenna Castro-Caspon. She's the CEO of The Independent Clinician and the creator of Private Practice School. Jenna started her private practice on the side of her job when she was 26 years old because she had early career burnout. Friends kept asking her how she did it, so she created her company, The Independent Clinician, to teach SLPs and OTs how to build their own lifestyle and traditional private practices. Jenna's now helped over 10,000 clinicians build successful and sustainable private practices through her programs available through Private Practice School. Jenna is the author of The Path to Private Practice and host of the Private Practice Success Stories podcast. She lives outside of Boston, Massachusetts with her wife and two sons.
To the Swallow Your Pride podcast. I'm your host, Teresa Richard. I'm a board-certified specialist in swallowing and swallowing disorders and founder of the MedSLP Collective and MedSLP Education. This podcast is dedicated to delivering the latest evidence-based practice to medical SLPs everywhere, while also recognizing that medical SLPs everywhere are doing the best with what they've got. Whether you're a new clinician seeking tangible tools for therapy or a seasoned vet stuck in a rut, my goal is simple: to help you advance your practice without feeling overwhelmed or underappreciated. This means that together we'll build confidence, broaden your knowledge, and reignite your passion for our field. So if you're listening, I encourage you to swallow your pride and be open to new ideas, because at the end of the day, you and your patients deserve that kind of support.
Just a quick disclaimer that all statements and opinions expressed in this episode do not reflect on the organizations associated with the speakers and are their own opinions solely.
With that, let's dive in.
Hello, Jenna.
How's it going, Teresa?
Good. Good afternoon. Thank you for joining me.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Yes. I have a pollen voice, so I know I sound a little off cue, so people don't need to write into me and tell me how horrible my vocal hygiene is, because I know it's bad, but it's also pollen today. So that's my disclaimer for the day. So,
okay. Well, my disclaimer is that I had a cold a few weeks ago, and I also am still like voice recovering. So also voice people.
Yeah.
It's going to get better. I am hydrating.
Yes. Same with coffee. As I said, vocal hygiene is not the best right now. Okay. As we digress, tell the people who you are, Jenna.
Hey, so my name is Jenna Castro-Caspon. I am a private practice coach and the head of a company called The Independent Clinician, where we help speech language pathologists start, grow, and scale successful private practices step by step.
Awesome. 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 All right. And I know Jenna's been on the podcast maybe once or twice before, but it's been a few years. And so I'm really excited to have you back, because I think what I love so much is how many medical SLPs you've now drawn to your private practice side, which I just love. I'm all about however you can treat the patient in a way that serves you best is the way that I think is best for you. And if you love the hospital setting, if you love the SNF setting, if you love home health, if you hate all of them and private practice is the answer for you, I want you to go do that thing. And so I love that you've started collecting private practice medical SLPs, because I think it's beautiful. There's just people that get lost in the cracks in so many places. And if this is an avenue for them to get the treatment that they seek, then it's a wonderful thing. So
Yeah. And well, I started as a hospital SLP, right? My clinical fellowship was at Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital in Boston. I was so lucky to have that CF. I had a placement there when I was in grad school, and I loved it. It truly was my dream job. You know, I got to work with, I was in the outpatient department, you know, people with aphasia, traumatic brain injury, post-concussive syndrome, like all kinds of really cool stuff. Got to help a ton of people. But after not too long, I started really feeling like stuck and started feeling what I didn't know at the time was basically early career burnout. We didn't have a name for it back then, but I was just really feeling lost and like, how do I have this like crazy productivity requirements? The paperwork was unbelievable. You know, the amount of care that we could give clients was like so short. And I just kept thinking like, God, there has to be more for these people, right? I can't just discharge this guy with aphasia who can still barely talk and needs more services. But like, that's, you know, what's happening. And so that's really why I started my practice and why so many people who are in the medical world who want to start practices, for a lot of people, it's because they really feel like the patients aren't getting the care that they really truly need in the hospital setting. And so they're starting practices and providing the care that the clients deserve and that they really want to provide as clinicians.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing is that like in some communities, we just don't realize how big the need is. And, you know, the hospital SLPs, the acute care SLPs will say, you know, their goal, what their role in the hospital is getting patients discharged, right? Is getting them stable and getting them out the door. And that's all good and well, right? If that is your responsibility, but you get the patient stable, right? You get them good enough to get out the door. And then if they live in a place that, say, doesn't have a next level of care or they don't have a way to get home health, what do those patients do? You know, and I've seen so many patients end up going home on feeding tubes or going home, like you said. I mean, still completely, you know, not able to communicate, but they're sent home. And so I think this is just such a huge gap filler for so many communities. Sure, there's communities that have wonderful levels of care, but those are few and far between. And sometimes it's if you can find this niche of people that need you, and you know, you and I know a lot of mutual friends that have been able to find that population that is not being served well, and now they're able to do that for their community.
Yeah, totally. I mean, so to me, one of the best examples of this is Katie Brown. So Katie Brown lives in Buffalo, New York. She or the Buffalo, New York area. She has a private practice that is completely faced, or you know, it's cognition and language. I think they maybe do a little bit of swallowing, but it's this amazing practice, and it's in an area that has two medical centers. And so, you know, when she was first getting started, she was like, I don't know, like, am I going to be able to, you know, air quotes, compete with these medical centers? Who's going to hire me? Whatever. They've grown and flourished. She has multiple therapists working for her. She's trying to get ahead of wait lists by hiring more clinicians, but even that part has been hard. And so one of the great things about being an adult private practitioner, or just a medical focused private practitioner also, is that there's just so few of those types of practices that when you do start one, you really have an opportunity to be a big fish in a small pond and have everybody send folks your way because they don't have somewhere else to send them to. And something you said earlier kind of made me think of something. I often say that there are more pediatric private practices because there tend to be more kids who need services than adults who need services. But another thing that I kind of just thought of is that there are so many adults who are going without services that the need for adult services actually is probably higher than we actually realize. But because people are just sort of like, I don't know, I guess this is how life is now, and there's nobody who can help me, and what am I going to do, blah, 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 they're not seeking out those services. So I think there's actually an even greater need for adult services than we even realize.
Yeah, it's actually funny you said that. Interesting that you said that. So for my PhD last semester, I was working on this paper just about like, you know, incidence and prevalence of patients that require services. And I came across this paper that I'll see if I can find it and make sure we put it in the show notes for you guys. So if I butcher the statistics, you can check out the real deal. But it was something like only 6% of people with swallowing trouble seek out treatment. And then they broke it down even further and said of that 6%, only 3% actually understands what's out there and available. So there's this other half of these people that have trouble, but they don't realize
what's even out there, you know? And I think that's just a part of my big education crusade and why I wrote the book that I did, is that so many people know that they're having a problem, but they don't know that there's treatments, that there's solutions, that there's actually experts out there that can help them. And then what that actual treatment process looks like. So, you know, I think it's like, it's hard to say, but it's one of those things that like people don't know what they need until they know that they need it. And so I think that's one of these things, you know, it's like, oh, I always have all these swallowing troubles, but I don't really know what to do. And the next thing you know, you see a private practice that specializes in swallowing disorders. And you're like, oh, that might be the thing that I need, you know, and then they go look it up and they find a brochure. And it's just hard because it's not something that you're going to go back to a hospital for, you know, if you're walking and talking and functioning and you just can't eat chicken, you know, you're not going to just go to the hospital and say, I can't do this, but you probably would be more likely to go to a private practice.
Yeah. And I think that that's where education is so important, right? So if you are going to have an adult focused private practice, you really need to be educating like everyone in the community that you exist, but also like what kind of services that you provide and what types of symptoms, if someone's experiencing this problem, like call me, right? Because there are some like, you know, weirder symptoms or, you know, sometimes, you know, coughing after meals, for example, right? Like lots of people probably think that's totally normal, right? They're, oh yeah, I just kind of do this. Or maybe they don't even think about it at all, where we know that that's actually like problematic, right? Or at least it can be problematic. And so I think that, you know, everyone kind of understands what like articulation disorders are and like fluency and that kind of stuff. But, and then know to seek out a speech pathologist. Yeah. But I think that the education piece is sometimes what's missing in marketing, where really the business owner needs to make sure that, yes, not only, you know, physicians and, you know, specialists and whatnot know about you, but also the general population, using the types of words and phrases that are going to resonate with people, right? So that they understand what their problems are and that they can be solved.
Yeah. I think that's a huge thing. And, you know, going back to a point that you made about, you know, there usually seems to be a lot more therapists for children. I think what's interesting is we're getting to this point now where all the baby boomers are geriatric, right? So we have this massive population, but think of where the medical system is now. We're catching so many things. We're starting to really hone in on prevention and okay, you have these problems, let's catch them and fix them before they become the thing that lands you in the hospital. So I think we are seeing this explosion from the baby boomers, but then also this focus on prevention and then just this knowledge of people saying, hey, this is a thing, go get treatment for it, you're able to get that. And so I just don't think we as SLPs are doing a good job of keeping up with that demand because we think it has to fall all on the typical, you know, hospital SNF LTAC system, whereas we can take things into our own hands as private practitioners.
Yeah. And like, think about the amount of people who actually do maybe know that they have a problem, but they're stuck on wait lists at the hospital, right? Like pretty much every community across the country has a wait list for outpatient services, right? And a lot of the types of diagnoses that our clients have are not the kind of things that can wait, right? Yeah. Or like they get worse when they wait. And this, well, I mean, I was going to say mostly with adults, but with children too, right? Like things don't necessarily get better without treatment, right? Yeah. And so like, that's too why I think that more and more SLPs need to start practices because there simply aren't enough providers out there to serve the amount of people who really truly need our services. So if anyone's listening to this and they're like, oh my gosh, she's so right. Like I've heard about wait lists in my area. Like I know when I send someone, you know, to this place that they're going to be on a wait list for, you know, 6 months or whatever, like maybe you're going to do this. Maybe you're going to start your private practice. And because you open a practice, now those people are going to get services, like just point blank get services, but also get them quicker than they would if they were waiting for the hospital to have an opening.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about this because this is sort of a hot topic right now, Jenna. So the whole big non-compete thing that's come into effect. And I think, you know, so many of my friends have said like, oh, I've been at this hospital for 20 years, but I know we have an insane wait list for outpatient. I would love to just start my own private practice, but I think I'm locked into this non-compete. And I can speak for only myself, Teresa Richard. I have always been anti non-competes, especially in the medical field, because all you are doing is denying someone services that needs them. And so I have I don't make anybody that works for me sign a non-compete. I've never upheld that. Like I don't think they have a place in medicine. because that's all you're doing is denying someone treatment that needs it. So, but let's talk about it, because I know you've had some SLPs go through your programs that have been sort of bound by these non-competes.
Yeah, totally. So I'm of the same mindset that you are, right? To me, non-competes are part of like a fixed or scarcity mindset, mm-hmm. right? Where like an abundance mindset is to say, no non-competes, there's enough clients to go around, like we need more providers, right? But the interesting thing is, you know, for years we've been hearing like, you know, for certain states that have non-competes, like they never hold up in court. So like, yes, maybe you had to sign one, but you know, it's not going to hold up in court. But I'm the kind of person who I don't want anyone to get to court, right? Like if we can, we could avoid that, I think that would be great for everybody, right?
Maybe including the patients.
Right. Including the patients. Exactly. So, but I do tell people that, you know, if you're going to start a practice, like I'm also like an honesty is the best policy kind of person. And I do think that you should be, you know, sharing with your employer what your plans are. However, you know, people who have this non-compete, like in the past, have really not been able to go out and start seeing their own clients, right? And again, that comes from that, like, that scarcity mindset of, you know, this is a practice. We want all of our people to come through here. But a lot of those practices have wait lists, right? Mm-hmm. And so by having, again, more opportunities for clients, I think that that's really important for the clients. But for the clinicians, we also know that like people's finances right now are like, you know, a little wonky, right? People need to be able to earn more money. So I've also always been against non-competes because I think that, you know, everyone has their own personal financial circumstances. And if you want to have, you know, a side job or a side hustle or whatever, like, I think that you should be able to do that. So I have been getting a lot of questions about this. I will say that there's a difference though between a non-compete and a non-solicitation agreement, because I've been seeing people kind of talk about that and often mess them up. Yep. So a non-solicitation means that you can't like tell your clients at your primary place of employment, hey, I started my own practice, come see me there instead. Mm-hmm. Right. This is also what happens with like hairdressers, for example, right? If a hairdresser leaves a salon and kind of, you know, air quotes, takes clients with them, like it's kind of a similar kind of a thing. So now you're absolutely able to start your own private practice on the side, but you still can't really say like, hey, you know, little Johnny's mom, like come see me at my practice, you know, not see people at this place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. Like I, you know, it's like you have to put on your business owner hat. Right. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, with the companies that I own, with the courses, with the education, you know, people always say, well, can I like present this material elsewhere? And I'm like, I would never, ever try to own your IP. I want the world to know anything that they need access to. You know, it's so hard. And then it's hard as a business owner, but you don't want someone to go and solicit, you know, people that work for you. But I don't think it has a place in the medical field. You know, I don't know. It's not like we're selling shoes. Like it's people's lives. So.
Or like pizza or something, right? Like there's an abundance of certain services or certain goods and whatnot, but you're right. In our field, there's not an abundance of them. And the only way for there to become that is to have more providers.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about the hot topic of burnout.
So that's a major thing that you see all over, you know, Instagram, right? Like, it's like you can't go on Instagram on a Sunday night and not see a million posts about the Sunday scaries, right? Or just people like really trying to like lean into self-care because like on the weekends because they're like drowning during the week, right? And so, you know, I think that this has become a major issue. It was already an issue before COVID, but I don't think that we talked about it quite as much.
Yeah.
But now I think that it's like a huge problem. And I really see burnout as like the number one threat to people being able to stay in this profession, right? Yeah. We all get into this profession to help people, right? We're all helping people at heart. But what happens is over time, we pour so much of ourselves and our energy and our time and our effort and everything into our employers, into our hospitals, into our schools, into the patients, the clients, the everybody, that there becomes, you know, so little of ourselves left over. And that's what is starting to lead people to want to like leave the field. Right. And so I think that, you know, I don't have hard numbers on this, but I'll say anecdotally, I've had so many people who have come through my programs who have said, Jenna, this was it. This was my last chance to see if I could, you know, regain my love of the profession again. And like, thank goodness I was able to do so. Right. Because I think that, you know, the missing link is about control. And if you have control over your time, over your schedule, over your finances, you know, over all those kind of other things, that's also what can help you like stay in balance versus feeling burned out, right? Control is really, really important. And most people who are working in air quotes regular jobs just don't have that control. And so the way to take back that control is to start your private practice.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think it's just so hard. It's like there's wonderful clinicians out there that are incredible. You know, they're brilliant. They do great work with their patients, but they just feel sort of bound or stuck by the facilities that they're working in, or if they have a difficult boss, or, you know, they're always told to stay in their lane. You know, there's a million things that could hold somebody back. Or sometimes people just need a change. You know, they say you make like major life transitions like every 7 years or something like that. But then there's people that stay at the same facility for 20 years because they're just nervous to leave. But, you know, I always encourage people to just be open-minded. Like, I love this field so much because there's so many ways we can help patients. And I think, you know, I personally love skilled nursing. I know a lot of people do not like skilled nursing. And I always tell people, go find a different facility. I promise you there's good facilities out there. There's terrible ones, but there's wonderful ones too. But, you know, I think people just need to be open to trying a new mode of service delivery. You know, if you just aren't cut out for the red tape of the hospital system, then maybe this is it for you. And I think sometimes it takes major life transitions, like having a baby or moving to a new city or something like that, to nudge you to, okay, maybe this is the sign that I need to start my private practice because nothing else is coming to fruition, or I need the time flexibility. I need to be in charge of making my own money, my own hours, things like that.
Yeah, totally. And the good news is that you don't have to like quit your job and then start a private practice.
Yeah.
Right. This is literally what I teach people how to do, is to at least start their private practices on the side of their job so that you can dip your toe into the private practice waters, make sure that you like it, and start to like gain a caseload, gain some confidence, and gain some income, and then decide if you want to go all in. And this whole non-compete situation and getting rid of those is going to make that so much easier for people, right? So I'm sure that there's probably people listening to this right now who are like, oh my gosh, like I have been wanting to do this. I've been bound by these rules. I haven't been able to, but you know what? Maybe I should try this private practice route, because you're right. There's so many people out there who are at kind of like a career crossroads, right? And they're like, okay, should I change jobs, right? I'm at this SNF I don't like, should I go to a new SNF, or should I change settings, right? Maybe I'm going to go to acute, right? Or just go work in a school, who knows, right? But like starting this private practice on the side of your job allows you to see like, am I going to like this before you leap or jump into anything? And then the other thing you could do when you get to that point is to have your practice. And as you're building your practice, then you still do PRN someplace, or you have a part-time job. So you still have some of that like steady income coming in, or, you know, if it's PRN, it may not be totally steady, but more steady, right? And then you're building your private practice also. And then you also have more options. Like one of the reasons why people stay in the same job for decades is because they don't feel like they have options, but you do have options, and private practice is a great option.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Let's talk a little bit, if you don't mind, Jenna, about, you know, I think the tough part is it might even be just this limiting belief that we've projected upon ourselves about healthcare practitioners, people working in the medical field, helping professional people making money. And I think that's something that you and I have always tried to encourage people, that the more money you make, the more people you can help. And you can't help people if you don't have the income to provide the services needed. And let's talk about that, because I think it's just so prevalent in our field that like, well, I want to do a private practice, so I only have to charge this much to the patients and I feel bad charging them. And you can't run a sustainable, profitable business with that mindset.
No, totally. So this is something I was actually having a discussion with my friend Lucy about this last week. And she said something that was like kind of earth shattering to me and maybe to some of your listeners. You know, there's this prevailing belief that, you know, I didn't get into this profession for the money, right? Raise your hand if you've ever said that, right? And so lots of people say, I didn't get into this profession for the money. However, friendly reminder that you actually did go into this profession for the money. You went to graduate school to learn how to earn money as a speech pathologist, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So you did go into this profession to learn how to make money. Otherwise, you could have volunteered, right? You could have been a volunteer somewhere or whatever else, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's like part of this mindset where then people are like, oh, you're right. But that doesn't mean you have to, you know, price gouge people or whatever, but you do have to charge something that's going to be sustainable for your practice, for your own like personal livelihood and everything else. And I do think that there's a lot of people out there who really have this like this money guilt when it comes to, you know, charging clients, because I think that they're thinking about it as like, I'm taking something from my clients, right? Yeah. Versus realizing how much are you giving to these clients and how happy are they and, you know, thrilled that you're able to help, you know, their child, their spouse or whatever, that they will pay. Right. Yep. And they want to pay. And it's not just private pay. Right. There's insurance. There's Medicare. There's Medicaid. There's scholarship programs. There's, you know, flex spending accounts. There's lots of ways to be paid in private practice. And you don't have to feel guilty for it because you have a master's degree or more. And you have, again, you have these skills, which are really important. And people are looking for the skills that you have. And so, you know, let the skills that you have be valued, like financially.
Yep. Yep. I think we do a horrible job or we undervalue ourselves so much. We help people communicate and we help people swallow. Like, I can't think of two more things that attribute to our quality of life than that. And I just know, you know, speaking from my own experience with my son, we have two clinicians that are in private practice that my child would have never made the progress that he's made without them. So their worth to us is off the charts. Like, I will continue to pay and pay and pay for their service because I know what they have done for him and it's invaluable to our family. And I think one of them's raised her rates like four times since we've started working with, I do not care. She is worth that. Her value is worth that. Like, people said my son would never walk. He's walking now, you know. He would barely eat applesauce. Like, he's eating everything now. I mean, these things just made such an impact to his life, to our family life, has made things so much easier for us. For me, I have such a, you know, a burden of, that's not the right word. It's just, it's a lot to take care of someone that is total need, but to have now these things that he can do himself and they're not, you know, I have the freedom to not have to do those things for him anymore. That stuff's invaluable. And I just wish SLPs would realize, even if you don't get this respect and fanfare from your facility, I hope you intrinsically know that what you do is so incredible and so powerful.
Now, I know that, you know, your situation with Cam is a little bit different, but when it comes to like, would he be able to have the care that he needed in a, you know, traditional place?
You know, and it's funny you say that. There are some therapists that work at his school that we do use. And he's used the school therapist the entire time he's been in school. These two other private practice therapists that I'm talking about, they are very, 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 very specialized. And so the therapists that he has in his school are sort of more generalist, which we need. And they're very valuable too, because they program his AAC device. They teach the teachers how to communicate with him through the AAC device. I would absolutely not devalue them by any means, but these private practitioners are so highly skilled. They're so highly niched in his specific condition that I think that's what's really important too. You know, you absolutely can be a private practitioner and be a generalist, but if you are so passionate about one patient population or one, you know, level of severity, go all in on that, you know, find those people that need you. And I even said to the one, I said, I got her name from word of mouth from somebody else. And I said, I couldn't find anything about you on the internet. You have no social media presence. And she's like, I don't need that. I get word of mouth referrals. I have a waiting list. Like, I've never had to use those other modes of marketing because people in the community know me. And like, I mean, how incredible is that to have that type of reputation that, you know, she's able to just see the exact population that she is so passionate about. Like, imagine how happier you would be going to work, you know, knowing that you are working with the exact patient population that you want to be working with.
Yeah, totally, totally. And the reason why I asked that question is because I know that there are, you know, kids and adults who are receiving services in, you know, schools and hospitals, early intervention, everything else, who aren't getting everything that they need there, right? And so, and it's not the fault of the school SLP or the, you know, hospital or whatever, or, you know, the clinician. It's like the system that they're working in, right? And so private practice also offers an opportunity for both clinicians to work outside of the box, but as well as clients to get outside of the box therapy, right? Because there's so many restrictions on like traditional settings that, you know, frustrate the heck out of us, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I can't tell you, and I'm sure that you're the same way, when you're working for systems, they are so slow to change, right? Mm-hmm. And even when you come up with a brilliant idea or you know an infinitely better way to do something, and you can suggest that until you're blue in the face, but like the time that it takes to actually implement that and whatever, like takes too long, right? Yeah. When you have your own business, you can make changes like that day, right? You can decide, listen, this is a kid who actually needs to be seen like in this way or this time frame or this, you know, duration or frequency. And you can suggest that and you can make those changes, right? And so it's really important for, again, for clients to get the services that they need in an outside of the box model, but for clinicians who also want to be able to do the same way, right? So, you know, I'm so happy that CAM is getting services in multiple places, right? And I think that that's also just another example of like why there are some people who stay, who don't pursue private practice, right? They've got jobs that they're happy with, and that's awesome. And other people who are like, you know what? I am an expert in something, or I maybe I'm not an expert yet, but I have a population I really care about. Or like, you know, I just frankly need the flexibility, right? I love the field, but I've got little kids at home. I need a flexible schedule, like, but I also need to make money. So I'm going to go the private practice route.
Yeah. You know, I love what you said about, you know, CAM's getting services in a few different areas. Well, the interesting part is that when we first sought out this other private practitioner that, like I said, she's very well known, is nowhere on the internet. She's about 15 minutes north of his school. So we live about a half an hour from his school to begin with. And then she's located about another 15 minutes. So like part of me was like, I need to get him to see this woman. How am I going to get him there? You know, 45 minutes one way, that's an hour and a half. You know, if it's a half an hour session, that's like 2 hours. You know, she wants to see him three times a week. And I don't even know how it came up, but she said something like, do you want me to call the school and see if I can just see him at the school? And I was like, oh my gosh, you would do that? And she's like, do you mind if, you know, if he takes a half an hour out of his academic day for therapy? And I'm like, no, like he needs it. So she called up the school. The school was, they were like, yeah, of course. Let us know when you want to come in and see him. And so it was like, I was just so surprised. I'm like, how was that so easy? Like we just, like I keep saying, we put these limiting beliefs on ourselves. Like as a mother, I'm going to do anything to get my child the services he needs, but the therapist made it a no-brainer for me. And so then we did it with the other therapist too, that I was talking about, that was incredible. I think she was even further than that woman was. And I just said, hey, we have another therapist that actually goes to his school. Would you be willing to do that? And she's like, oh yeah, I work in that area on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I'll just call the school and tell them. And I was like, what is this? Like, so I want to thank private practitioners that are out there that are actually like very out of the box thinking, because I like to think sometimes I'm out of the box thinking, but I couldn't even wrap my head around that. So, and I just, you know, I think some of these schools are getting to these points now that they just know the kids need services and they know they're not able to provide all of the services, but they also don't want to deny them to the kids, you know?
Yeah. Well, another like creative solution like that. So I have someone in my Grow Your Private Practice program. She does services. She does social skills groups for kids, mostly middle schoolers. But you know where she does them? She does them at the after school program.
Yep.
Right. So yep. It's like the kids are already there, right? They already are going to the after school program every day or whatever. So rather than taking away from, you know, their day or whatever, she's just inserting herself, you know, again, people are signing up for this, right? But she's offering, maybe inserting yourself isn't the right word, but you know what I mean? She's yep. offering her services at the end of the day in after school programs. Mm-hmm. And she lives in Texas and her practice is booming. And now she has more private practitioners working for her who are also doing this after school model. And they're blowing up. And I think that again is so cool. And it's just thinking like, okay, where are the patients and can I go to them? Or does it make more sense for them to come to me? Or do we meet in a community location, right? Yeah. There's another like new niche in speech therapy that I'd never heard of until the last year, which is nature-based speech therapy, mm-hmm. right? Like I've heard of nature schools, although kind of barely, but like that's a whole new thing, right? And so I think it's so cool where people are like, hey, let me figure out how to be like super functional to help these kids, but also help my own fulfillment, mm-hmm. right? Of another person in one of my programs, she had a video on Instagram last week. It's pouring rain. She's out with this kid. They are having the time of their lives, and there's so much language stimulation happening. And it was just so cool to see. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of thinking and working and living and earning outside of the box.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I mean, of course there's some fear behind some of these, you know, alternative methods, but like, I even think of, you know, I ran a mobile fees business for 10 years and, you know, we serviced over like 100 different facilities, and all that was going in and asking them, hey, do you need somebody else to provide some services for you that are faster, quicker, cheaper, easier than you transporting your patients to the hospitals. And sure, it can be nerve-wracking to go and have these conversations with some of these bigwigs, but I think I'm always surprised because it's easier than you think. And the amount of people that will say, oh my gosh, we would love that. Oh my gosh, that would be so helpful. I just keep saying we keep putting a lot of limiting beliefs on ourselves, but we've just got to get over that fear and value ourselves more than I think we've been valued by some facilities, unfortunately.
Yeah. And one trick that y'all can think about with this, because I get that a lot. I hear a lot of people say like, oh, I'm so scared. Like, I don't want to go talk to doctors. Like, I'm an introvert. Like, no one believes me, but I'm an introvert too. But the point is,
I like sitting here talking to my computer. That's it.
I know. But like, when that fear really is about like kind of fear of personal rejection, right? You're like, okay, if I go see this doctor and they say no, or they say, you know, they brush you off or whatever, you know, that maybe makes you feel like a little bit rejected or whatever, right? But you're not doing this for you. You're doing this for your clients, right? So if you can go to a physician's office, even if it's an uncomfortable experience, even if it's not your favorite thing to do, if you can just psych yourself up for like 10 minutes to go to this doctor's office and put your clients first, right? And say, listen, you know, I know that there are probably people that you're working with, you know, through your practice that have these needs. You know, if that's true, send them to me, right? I would love to help them. These are the kind of clients I serve. This is how I help people, right? And so then they'll probably send you some referrals, right? Now you're building your practice from like a marketing point of view. But again, it's all about trying to say like, you know, psychologically, can I do this, like getting out of your own head and saying, I'm going to do this for my patients. Even if I'm a little uncomfortable for the next 10 minutes, yep. It's worth it to me to help these people who desperately need help. And yes, it's going to help my practice too. But sometimes even just like flipping the mindset on that can really help people who are like helping people, like make it happen.
Yeah. I remember when I started my fees business, I had someone that just encouraged me to just pick one day and just commit to, you are going to call everybody in the world and you may get 1,000 no's that day, but too bad. You're going to just do this exercise. And so I just woke up in the morning and I said, I'm literally calling every single phone number I can find. And I think I ended up connecting, I think it was like 67 people that I was on the phone with that day. Of course, I got some no's, some not interested, some don't call us again, but I had conversations with 76 people. I never had to do that exercise again because it got me so much traction and dialogue. Just, oh, sure, let's follow up via email, send me some more information. And it got me the contracts that I need to get to build my business. And I think sometimes like the whole process sounds scary and fearful. And like, I don't want to swim in molasses for the next 5 years of my life. And there will be hardships, don't get me wrong. But I think taking that first step is always the hardest, you know, as cliche and stupid as that sounds, it's always the hardest. But if you can just commit to one day to being fearless, it's what it can do for you, your business, the patients you serve, it's incredible.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, if you're going to have a business, like people can't hire you if they don't know about you.
Exactly.
Right. So yep. I get a lot of people who are saying like, oh, but I don't want to, like, how am I going to put myself out there or whatever, right? You know, the thing that happens is that when you're first starting your practice, you do have to tell people about you, right? People have to know about you, right? Yep. And you have to put that effort to find clients. But if you put in that effort, even one day of calls, what happens is then patients start finding you, mm-hmm. right? Which is exactly what you said is happening with your son's therapist, right? So like, you don't have to constantly be going out there, putting yourself out there, doing all these kind of things. Like, you do have to do that. And you have to do it from time to time. I'm not saying it's a one and done thing, but over time, what happens is that people start to find you and you don't have to feel like you're constantly going out to find clients.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always say, like, I just beg people that are interested in doing this. Like, if this is on your heart, please freaking do it. Because as a mother who's just constantly wanted to find the right people for my son, I wouldn't know these people exist if they didn't do this and like you said, have themselves out there, you know? And I know there's so many people. I get emails weekly. I probably get 10 emails a week from patients saying, do you know anybody in this area? Who can help me with this? Is this a thing? And it just breaks my heart that, you know, in a lot of these areas, I don't know who to send people to or I really wish if you're as passionate about this field as Jenna and I are, and this is something that's on your heart, I would just beg you to pursue it because there's so many patients that need the services that you can provide.
Yeah. And I say this all the time, that private practice is like a bridge. And on one side of the bridge are the clients and the patients who desperately need our services. The other side of the bridge are the clinicians who are burning out, who are, you know, overworked and underpaid, right? And they need, you know, the freedom, flexibility, fulfillment, and finances that I talk about all the time. So private practice really is the bridge that helps clients get what they need, but also helps clinicians get what they need. So if you have the time and the inclination, do this, try it, see if you like it. And then you can always go from there. You're not quitting your job tomorrow. You're picking up a couple private clients on the side. You're helping at least a couple people. And then, you know, either you stay on the side and use this to kind of supplement your income, or you get bitten by the bug and you decide to go all in.
Going all in. Yep. Yep. I love it. So now that we've convinced everyone to leave their jobs and start a private practice, let's give them some tangible steps here, Jenna.
Totally. Okay. So I talk about these, you know, three steps to starting a private practice, right? So step one is you have to protect your private practice. This is when you get those legal ducks in a row and you make sure that you really are building your practice on a solid legal foundation, right? So that's step number one, is to make sure that you're doing this the right way, right? So once you have that legal foundation in place, the next thing is to market, right? And to promote your practice and to get those clients. And we've talked about, you know, a couple of marketing strategies, you know, here during this episode, but really it's about like digital marketing, right? Having a website, having, you know, maybe a social media presence, getting your name listed in directories, that kind of thing. Awareness marketing is making sure that like people in your local community know about you, so you do get that word of mouth. And then relationships is like the physicians and specialists, right? That they know about you and they can send clients to you. Everybody wants word of mouth marketing, but you kind of have to earn that, right? Like people have to know you exist and they have to know that you're out there and that you're doing a good job for people. That's how you get that word of mouth marketing, right? So you have protected your practice from a legal foundation. You have promoted your practice and now you're getting clients. And then the last part of it is that you have to bill for your services, right? You have to get paid for your services. And so that's where we talk about like private pay versus insurance, Medicare, Medicaid. There's other ways to get paid too, but those are kind of the big ones, right? So again, now we're kind of figuring out like, well, like what should your rate be? Unfortunately, if you're working with Medicare eligible people, you have to become a Medicare provider. That's another rule that's really important for people to know. So, you know, going through the credentialing process, making sure that you're credentialed with Medicare, you know, or Medicaid or insurance, and like learning how to bill the way that they need you to bill, then you get paid. And then kind of you go back and forth between this like marketing and billing, and like then you decide how much do you want to grow your practice. Do you again want to just have a couple clients on the side, kind of like a little supplemental side hustle, or do you want to grow your practice? And so if you want to see more clients through your practice, which I also think is the way to go for, you know, most people, but not everybody, then you do have to do more marketing, right? You have to fill the time in your schedule. And then once the time in your schedule is full and you have a wait list, now it's time to think about, okay, do I hire people? Do I bring on more clinicians so that we can help even more people? And that cycle continues. But I think that, you know, for most of us, don't learn anything about private practice when we're in grad school, right? And all of a sudden you get out into the field and either people start asking you, do you treat private clients? And you can either say yes or no, right? But you know, it's really important for people to have access to that information. Because when I was first starting my practice, there was no information, like zero information, right? Now there is information, but it's all over the place. And unfortunately, some of it is wrong, right? So that's why, you know, me and my programs exist to make sure that people know like the step-by-steps of like, do this first and then do that. Don't worry about that. Don't skip that one, right? So that you know exactly how to do this in an order that is going to not only make sure that you have a successful practice, but also make sure that you're not putting your clinical license at risk.
Yep. Yep. Awesome. Thank you for that. One of my most favorite things that Jenna says all the time is we teach you how to get your ducks in a row. And I think she's just so skilled at doing that because that is also very much her personality too. Yes. 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 She's not going to just throw you off the cliff and just say, you got to start all this tomorrow. She's meticulous about the method and the way that she allows you and supports you in starting things off slow. So if this is not something that, you know, there's so many people too that don't want to throw away their full-time job or they want to stay at the hospital part-time or they still have a passion for one thing, but they want something else. And I think Jenna's just so skilled at teaching that you can do it in whatever, however fast or slow you want to do it. So thank you, Jenna. Thank you for being you. And thank you for joining us again. I know it's been a few years since we've chatted, but I've just loved that you've taken so many medical SLPs under your wing.
Yeah, totally. And again, I think that like, you know, there's just more of an interest in private practice these days, right? And so, you know, I think probably the last time I was on your show, it was starting to get a little bit more popular, but like now
it's so
way more popular.
Yeah.
No, it's so cool, right? But again, it's like because people see the opportunities, right? Yeah. Like if there wasn't tremendous opportunity, I wouldn't be trying to get as many people to do this as possible, right? But we know that there are people who desperately need our services. And so, yeah, come do it. Come try it out. And if you would like the help, come find me and I'll happily help you.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, how can people find you?
Sure. Okay, so the two best ways to find me are, you know, if you're a podcast listener, which you obviously are if you're listening to this, I have a podcast called the Private Practice Success Stories Podcast. It's on, you know, iTunes and Spotify and everywhere else. And then the other way is just to go to my website. You can go to privatepracticeschool.com and I have lots of free resources there. I have information on my paid programs as well, but we would love to help you get started, you know, with a free webinar or a checklist or whatever else. But yeah, go to privatepracticeschool.com and I'll help you from there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, my friend. Appreciate you so much.
Thank you so much, Teresa.
And that's a wrap for this episode. As always, thank you so much for listening. And if you'd like to download the show notes from this episode, please visit swallowyourpridepodcast.com. There you can also sign up for our email list so that you'll never miss another episode. If you do like what you hear, then please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or share it on social media with your friends and colleagues because that is what keeps these episodes coming. If you'd like to be a guest, share feedback, or request a topic to be discussed on the show, please email podcast@teresarichard.com. Thank you so much for listening and we'll catch you next week.